Say when. Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. We are so glad you are with us. And remember, we are the Resistance. Well, this is going to be a really fun episode. And I think it's going to be one of those things, if you're a hunter like I am, you know, you have that, you know, ready, aim, fire. You can't wait for that opportunity to pull that trigger, right?
Sometimes it's just fire.
Ready, aim?
Yeah. No, just,
okay.
I see something.
You're right. Yeah, that's how a lot of, man.
Man, I'm going to tell you a quick story about that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've told you this story or not before, but we hunted all day one day. I think I've told you this, but man, if I've told you it before, whatever, it's still a good story. And nothing. Bird hunting, pheasant hunting, central Kansas. Dry as it gets, which is horrible because the dogs can't pick up any scent when there's no moisture. And we've been out, and I mean all day, like the sun's about to set. We're standing around in a semicircle just like, well, what a bust of a day, like not one bird. And 10 yards from us, there's a tumbleweed. One of my buddies goes over and kicks it, and a stupid rooster jumps straight up out of that tumbleweed. And we all go, I mean, like just, we instantly cooked the whole, like it was pheasant jerky, was ready
to
eat.
There was nothing
No,
left.
It just was this powder of feathers, and I felt so bad, but every one of us had, like, there was no ready aim. It was just boom.
You've been waiting so long.
Yeah. Okay. I can't believe everyone was ready for it. But I think six of us think they hit the bird. But I kid you not, it was just a cloud of feathers and a mangled mess of pheasant on the ground. Like, there was not a single savable bite.
One time, my dad and I were deer hunting, and it had been like a snowstorm. It was in Plummer, Pennsylvania. And we stopped, and it was deep snow. It was over knee deep. And we're sitting on this log. And we were under these couple of pine trees, and the snow was like kind of falling off, and you know, and you're just trying to stay out of this storm. And this turkey, we didn't even know was above us, evidently had fallen asleep, something weird, and it falls and it hits the log right between the two of us. I mean, there's not 3 feet between us, and it hits. Gosh. You know, you got a 25
pound
turkey.
No, they're not lightweight. Yeah.
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 And this thing jumps up, shakes his head, looks around, and takes off, and we're just sitting there just laughing our heads off.
Oh my gosh.
Well,
maybe so, Les Nessman dropped it out of a plane.
Haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, my doctor's orders, you know, what I'm supposed to be doing. But then I told you that a buddy of mine, I want to get something right. Last week, my buddy Doug Gert, he's got an archery store, and I called it Gert's Archery. It used to be called Gert's Archery.
Right.
It is DG Archery for those of you who are looking for it. I want to make sure I get that clear. So I got reprimanded a little bit. So he had me
around.
He goes, dude, really? You get the name wrong? I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
Well, it used to be.
Oh, it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good. He's
was
really good.
Was it renamed after?
Doug Gert, DG Archery.
Yeah, but was Gert's Doug's dad or something? Like, I don't know the family history.
No, Doug started the.
So he just renamed it at some point.
Yeah, just DG Archery.
Doug, we know you're listening at this point.
I know he is. I told him, I said, I'm gonna get that name right this week. But he gets a hold of me. This is so funny. So he says, hey, because we hunt a lot, especially during the rut. And this year, not being able to go where we usually go because I can't draw a bow. And he goes, listen, I got a crossbow here that I'll get you set up with. He goes, come on out. I have a couple of blinds above ground blinds. So I get out there, and he says, man, I want you to go all the way to the back of the property. He goes, they've been moving back here. He said, only open this one window because this one path you're going to see, that's the way they're going to be coming from. Now, he knows, and I know, the deer, they don't always listen to what we think they're going to do.
Sure.
But the windows on this thing are like with a black tint on the windows. So I open the one window, and I can see where the path is coming right at me. And I've got, you know, between a 20 and 30-yard shot. It'll be great. So I'm sitting there. You know, I get in the blind about 4:15, 4:30. And it's I think, last shooting light was like at 7:20 this day. So, you know, that last 45 minutes, 50 minutes, you know, is almost like what they call like the bewitching hour. That's when the deer are getting out of their beds. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is when they're getting up to feed, you know. And at that point, you're on high alert. You're watching everything. And it was a little bit windy as it was. I think the winds that day were like 12 to 14 mile an hour.
At your back?
Well, I was in the blind. The way they were coming, no, they were coming into my face, which was perfect wind if they came from the direction they should be coming from. Excuse me. So I opened the one window. Now, because they're like sprayed black, when you open it, it's like a mirror. And there's another window to my right with another path to my right, but that window is shut. So I'm sitting there, and kind of a new friend of mine from Kansas City, he's getting a hold of me. He's been saying, man, you need to come out and hunt with me. And he's been listening to the podcast for quite a while. His name is Kyle. And become a really good friend. And we're talking, and I had posted on Higgins Outdoors with Chasing Giants podcast. They were talking about scent control. And he was talking about cover scents and about, you know, how the industry has, you know, for so many years kind of pulled the wool over people's eyes, you know, with raccoon urine, fox urine, doe urine to try to cover your scent. Well, those are real scents, but the problem is our respiring skin cells every single month that we are releasing are very human specific, our specific smell. And that's what a deer is picking up on. So I said, I had posted on there about, I said, the only thing a whitetail can't smell is nothing. And I said, a deer could walk into grandma's house at Thanksgiving. And you and I would walk in and go, wow, it smells incredible in here. It just smells like Thanksgiving. But a deer, if they could talk, would walk in and say, I smell corn casserole, green bean casserole. I smell stuffing. I smell turkey. I smell cranberry. So they could identify every single smell. And they could tell you exactly what room everything was in. And so I'm telling him about, you know, the industry has kind of done some smoke and mirrors trying to get guys to buy things they really don't need to have. And so as we had been messaging, it had been like maybe a 10-minute break, and I see my phone kind of light up. I laid it down, and he says, hey, where was that? Which feed was it on? Well, I should have waited, and I know better. And he wasn't trying to get me off my, but I pick up my phone, and I go, oh, yeah, I'll go ahead and answer that real quick. There's nothing going on. So I'm looking. I hadn't been looking at my phone 15 seconds. And in that one window that's reflective like a mirror, it's casting the reflection to my right out that window, and I see three deer standing there at about 16 yards. I'm like, no.
I know better.
And I'm like, what do I do? I didn't plan on them coming from this direction, so I slowly kind of reach up, and I'm trying to unlock this one window. Well, that window hadn't been opened this season yet, and it stuck.
Oh.
I didn't check it. I didn't have a plan. I was ready to hunt, and I was, you know, ready to get a deer, but I just didn't follow through with everything that I know to do. So the kind of lead-in with this is I've met so many guys in my life that they're like ready aim, ready aim, ready aim, but they're never ready aim fire because they don't have a plan. I remember being turkey hunting one time, and my buddy and I were sitting there, and he's doing the calling, an incredible caller. And all of a sudden, I hear him start to yell with his voice, like, hey. I'm going, what is he doing? There was a guy who had come up over the hill following the call.
Oh, gosh.
And he's got his gun pointed right at us. And before he could fire, you know, he's talking away. And he starts yelling at this guy. And I'm thinking, what in the world? And he's yelling, hey, we're people. And then he starts waving his arms, don't shoot. But it's so funny, like you said about, you know, just kind of ready aim or just fire, you know, without ready aim. And there's a lot of guys that do that too. They don't have a plan. They just, I want to do this. And so they just walk into it and just kind of throw it out there and see what sticks on the wall.
So true. And just reminded me of a hilarious story. There was a guy, I think it was in London, and it was maybe in 1995. He went outside every night in his garden and he howled. Like the first night he did it, he howled. And then there was a howl. He heard a coyote howling back at him. He was like, this is really cool. So every night he would go out and howl until that coyote howled back at him for 1 year. And his wife was like, this is just really odd. And she went to the neighbors about a quarter mile away. And he'd been howling because he kept hearing a howl. And he was howling back. So those two dudes howling at each other.
Oh, my gosh.
For 1 year. That's the idea. This guy come over the hill because he heard a turkey sound.
Yeah.
What's he aiming? See, he's not ready.
Yeah.
He's just aim.
Yeah.
That's the dangerous part. Aim fire is really dangerous, much more than ready aim fire. Well, ready is an important component to ready aim fire.
It is.
Know your backdrop. Know your animal. Know your, like, everything, your environment. Well,
and in some seasons like that, if you're moving, you're supposed to have blaze orange on it. He was. Until you're set up, and then you can take it off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He didn't have anything on like that.
Goodness gracious.
Well, I just came from my cardiac rehab this morning. I got a hold of you and said, hey, man, can you be ready a little bit early? Because I got there early. I'm like, I want to get this done.
Yeah.
And I was in there, and the one thing that was on my mind was, you know, I graduate from this coming Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, I'll be graduating from my cardiac
rehab.
That's
crazy.
I've done all my sessions already. But I've heard so many guys say, dude, you know, I didn't finish my cardiac rehab, guys. I went through open heart surgery. They said, you know what? I mean, I went like twice. And I said, I can do this at home. But then I asked them, I said, but okay, did you do it at home?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't think I really did. I was feeling pretty good. And that's one of the things that if you don't have a plan, I have been able to watch my resting heart rate and my blood pressure from the first time that I get in there from doing 3 days a week cardio. And I'm lifting 4 or 5 days at home too now on top of that. I'm watching everything come down. My numbers are all getting into a good range because I'm following through with the plan. If you only partially do something, you're going to get what you've always had. You're not going to get the corrections that were done for you.
Yeah, very much so. There's,
I'm not there to check a box, right? Yeah, I'm there to get better.
And I think there's a lot of things that get in the way of that. You know, whether it's, we could say hesitation, but candidly, it's really much more like laziness.
Yeah.
It's, I'd rather do something else. That's what it really comes down to. I'm extremely selfish, which is a tough sin for most of us to deal with. And I'd rather just do something else. I am victim to that sin. I mean, it's easy to be selfish and go, I'd rather do whatever, you name it. I was on the phone with my doctor this morning. As I mentioned to the group, I'm going through a health, you know, change and doing good. I've made some major strides. I don't know if I mentioned, did I tell you that I was diagnosed as diabetic? I can't remember if
you
I mentioned that part.
A couple of weeks ago, you did.
So my numbers were bad, 356, which if you know anything about diabetes, that's a really bad
That's
number.
Where your sugar number was when you were checking. Do you remember what your A1C was?
No.
Yeah, when they found mine, I was 7.8. Now I'm keeping it like in the low sixes.
Yeah, okay, yes. So I think that was...
I think
that was 8. It was bad.
Yeah, that would be up there.
So the doctor's, you know, been working with me. He's a good friend of mine. Speaking of Kansas City, which we'll get back to in a second, he lives there. I'm at 140 now. The numbers are dropping really well. Post-meal, 140. Morning, 141. So right around the same.
Yeah, because you're going to get a spike after you eat.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad. So, and 100 is my goal, right? That's the top end of okay.
Yeah.
So, major change from 356 to 140. But I could have very easily said this last 3 months or so, I'm just going to eat that dang carrot cake.
Right.
Because I love carrot cake.
Oh, I do too.
Or I'm going to eat that, whatever, sandwich with all that bread that normally I would just hammer, but it's not as good for me now as... Maybe it never was, but it's definitely not good for me now. You know what I mean? And he goes, hey, are you sticking to the Mediterranean diet? And I go, well, it depends on how much steak they eat.
Right.
He goes, okay, so you're sticking to lower carbs. And I go, yeah. He goes, fair enough. Like, I'll live with that. But, it just, for me, I hesitated, or I was really, honestly, I was just selfish and lazy for too long. And, I mean, you know, I knew it. I was out of shape, overweight.
Well, you know, one of the best things that you can do is if, and especially if your spouse is on board with this, is when you go to the grocery store, don't put things in the pantry. Don't go buying things that we know are going to be a temptation.
Oh, yeah.
If it's not within reach, you know, because sometimes you're tired, you just want that taste, whatever it is, and you go, well, I'll just have one. Well, okay, maybe just, but two's, because I used to eat 10.
Yeah, and then you look at the box and go, oh, I can have 7 in a serving or whatever.
Right. And if you look at the sugar content, here's something a lot of people don't understand. If you took a wire brush to the outside of your arm on your skin and you rubbed it with the inflammation that would happen, that's what sugar is doing to your insides, to your arteries, right? To your veins. It is terrible for you.
It's the devil.
It really is.
That's bad.
It's really, really bad for you. I wish I could say that loud enough.
It's so good.
How many guys do I know that go out and they'll drink 6 Mountain Dews in a day, you know, or they're drinking regular Coke or just all this stuff that's bad for your body? One of my sponsors is Mountain Ops, and they cleared me to be able to do like 4, I think, of the different workout supplements now, because now that I'm back to where I was, but I always pay attention because they're either very low or no sugar at all in what I'm using. And I have to make sure I'm keeping my protein with what I'm doing because I'm trying to rebuild muscle. Now get this. I was before surgery, I was about 205. After surgery, I was 185. I'm back up to 196. And that's in a little over seven weeks.
Excellent.
So exercise, staying away from sugar, and building muscle back, right? But again, this is about having a plan. Going back to where we were, it's about discipline. if you're going to be eating right, if you're going to be exercising, whatever it is, you have to have a plan. And the person that usually just kind of goes right back to where they were, chances are they weren't very disciplined about, at least in that area of their life.
Yeah. That's the difference between someday and today.
Yeah.
Right? Discipline is the choice that says it's December 23rd and I'm not going to wait until New Year's Day for my resolution.
That's ready, aim, ready, aim, ready, aim.
Right. Yeah, that's if you're at December 23rd and you're going to wait until New Year's Day for your resolution, we already know that you're going to be part of National Quitters Day on the third Friday of the month, because you're going to drop your resolution like a bad habit because you prefer your bad habits.
Yeah.
So,
and people will come up and they say, "What's the best workout?" And I'll say, "Whatever one you'll do,
if you'll do one."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care whether you're lifting like soup cans.
Yeah.
Whatever you've got, whatever you can do body weight stuff. You can be doing push-ups. You can be doing sit-ups. You can be doing chair dips. There's all kinds of things you can be doing. Squats. But people, "Well, I don't have the right equipment." Okay. Excuse. That's ready, aim, ready, aim, ready, aim. It has to be ready, aim, fire. Today, I'm going to choose to do something that is going to help change my life. And here's the thing. When you take the time and you do it, it might not be fun in the moment, but when it's over with, you go, "I did it." And there's something about self-respect and confidence that begins to build because you followed through. That is one of the things that will help you form discipline. Mm. It's true.
Yeah, very true. I'm going to jump back real quick to just a little bit of a throwback song here. Yeah.
Oh, baby.
Except this is not Fats Domino. It's Wilbert Harrison. Mm.
Here I come.
Because you mentioned it earlier, and I haven't been able to stop thinking about it, I'm also going to Kansas City for a deer hunt this year.
Oh, you dog.
Yeah, I'm going in December to hunt with that doctor I was just mentioning. He's been a lifelong friend. He was my hunting buddy growing up, and he's the one with whom I have all the crazy stories, but... yeah, we're going to go bow hunting late season in December.
Kansas has got some monsters.
We'll be in Missouri, but they also have some decent-sized deer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not that same Milo and corn and stuff fed deer that we see in central Kansas, but there's going to be
there's some
good meat to be had.
There is a chance, and I told you about this off-air, there's a chance that I might be able to go out there in Missouri and hunt.
I know.
We'll see.
It'd be great if we went out at the same time.
I know. Hey, save gas.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you're going on to Colorado.
You'd have to jump on it. You'd have to Uber back to Kansas.
That's right. How much is that Uber bill going to be? Oh, that's $6,000.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like, is whenever you're going hunting, whether you're hunting in whitetails where you're taking extra stuff with you that you need, your calls, your rattling antlers, whatever you've got, especially when you go to Colorado, there you go again. You have to plan because when you're going high in altitude, you not only have to have all the right stuff, medical kits, food, hydration, right? I've gotten caught like that before. I was actually hospitalized because I went blind from lack of hydration.
Yeah, it's horrible.
But you have to train. And I was just talking last night, Doug Gert, who I was talking with, DG Archer, his son Carl, we were outside talking and saying, you know, he hunted, I think it was Idaho. But I said, anytime you hunt out west, you don't wait 30 or 60 days before the trip to start getting in shape. And a lot of guys go, "Well, this is my 60 to 90 day plan." No. I mean, if you
it better be the last 60 to 90 days, but you've already been prepping for 6 to 9 months.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
It will eat your lunch on the count of one if you're not ready. But yeah, again, there you go. It's ready, aim, ready, aim, ready, aim, fire. Fire is when I am finally to the place where I am ready. And there's nothing wrong with ready. There's nothing wrong with aim. That's a part of it. That's a part of the plan. But so many guys, they don't follow through when it comes time. And in their purpose, how many guys do you know, and I can think of in my mind, that, "Well, when I was young, I always wanted to, but I never did." I would ask this question many times. I would say to guys at retreats, let's say you had a rich uncle, and money was no obstacle. And he said, "I'm going to give you whatever it's going to take. You just have to tell me what it is that you want to do." Mm-hmm. And I would say, if money wasn't an obstacle, what would you do? What's keeping you from doing that? Because if God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills,
right,
and he's the one who's going to provide. Yeah, I mean, we can always, "Well, I don't have the startup money." Well, what's it going to take to get that? Yeah. Is it going to take to go to donors? Is it going to be working another job? What's that look like if you really want that?
I just went through that when I started my pickleball business a few months back. I say a few months now because it seems like it's only been a few months. It was May. I wanted it. And I was ready. And I had gone through my AIM process. And so I pulled the trigger. Same thing on the weight loss. I really wasn't ready. But then my doctor was like, "You're ready."
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Sometimes somebody else has to tell you you're ready.
Well, there's the gift. When I found out that I had diabetes, at first it was like, "You got to be kidding me! I have type 2 diabetes." It ended up being a gift because it made me eat healthier.
Yeah, yeah. So this is just the way there's this risk component, I suppose. But what's funny is choosing to not risk. I have no stats and facts to back this up, but my perspective is, choosing to not risk usually ends up being a bigger risk than taking the risk that you were avoiding.
And does it wake your heart up if you don't take the risk? No. You turn back to the mundane. It's that definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
I live my life based on several principles, most of them from the Word, but there's a study that was done a long time ago. A bunch of people in their 70s and 80s asked, if you could do anything over in your life again, what would you do? And the number one response was, I would risk more.
Yeah.
So I'm never going to be the guy that says, I wish I would have risked more.
What wakes the heart up of men is adventure. It's risk, right?
Yes.
And how many guys, they've just become safe and boring, right? Because it's risk that wakes up the heart. It's that pursuing the elk on the mountainside. It's going and sleeping in a sleeping bag in a bivy sack, you know, not in necessarily in the comfort of a cabin or in a tent. It's that pursuit that's like, man, this is like, and in the moment, it doesn't always feel good. I mean, you're out there, it's like, dude, this stinks.
So much so.
But later, after it's over with, you're like, man, I want to do that again. It woke my heart up.
Yeah. Heart, mind, soul.
Yes.
Spirit.
Yeah, all what is it that wakes you up? You know, one of the things that I always challenge guys to is I want you to write down one goal. And maybe you guys listening can do this. Write down one goal that what is it going to require from you? It's going to require faith and it's going to require risk.
Okay, here's the goal. Philippians 3:14. I press on toward the goal to win the prize.
Yes.
For which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus.
Yeah.
That's got to be one of our top goals. And what's funny is when I get down and think about goal writing, that never comes to mind. Like, oh, I want to, whatever, I want to earn this income and pay this thing and buy that whatever and do this such and such and visit this place and lose this weight. But the goal should be that I should always be writing down, win the prize that's been set before me.
And you don't do that without risk.
No.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is that risk is fully mitigated. Fully mitigated.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter whether you have won or lost. It was a matter that you ran the race.
That's correct. It's a fully mitigated risk. Yeah. There's absolutely nothing that will hurt your eternal life by taking that quote-unquote risk.
You know, it's running the race that is the risk. It doesn't matter where you finish. Now, you got some guys, maybe you got Navy SEALs or something out there, you know, the only easy day was yesterday, and do you ever accept defeat? Never. Well, I'm not saying you have to accept defeat. What I'm saying is you get back up again. When you fall down, you get back up. That's ready, aim, fire.
But I get up again. I wish I had that song teed up. I would have played it for you here.
But so, and here's one of the things too. When God opens the door, you have to be ready. You have to already be aiming so that when he says it's time to fire, you're ready to go. And you can't do, one of the things I talk about is you can't do this alone. When you run the race, you have brothers that are running with you that when you get weak, they help you back up. Just like Moses, when the battle's going on, he's got two men holding his arms up. Because men who walk alone tend to fall alone. But when you've got a brother beside you, you can aim true. You can take the shot. You can keep hitting the mark. And here's the other thing is, if that purpose that God has given us, that we're running this race toward, God isn't looking for perfection. He's looking for movement because you can't steer a parked car, right? You can't live, as we talk about, unleashed if you're stuck in neutral.
For sure. Verse, Proverbs 16:3 of commit to the Lord whatever you do and he will establish your plans. It's interesting the way that's worded because we already know what he has planned for us. But they aren't established until we commit to the Lord.
And I think this comes back even to James.
We don't get it if we don't commit to the Lord.
That's right.
Right? So.
I think, is it in James where it talks about.
Chapter 2?
Yes.
Yeah.
Faith without works is dead.
Dead, yeah, absolutely.
So many guys are afraid of that chapter of James. Well, I want to be careful because it sounds pretty works-based to me. No, what he's saying there, belief without action doesn't change anything.
Yeah, all of James actually makes me scared.
I know, but it's powerful. Consider
it pure joy.
When you're reading it through the right lens and understand, it's a powerful. Oh,
yeah, it's a great book. There's no question
consider
about
pure
it.
Joy when you face brothers. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you face brothers, when you face trials of many kinds.
Yes.
But then it goes, because the testing of our faith develops
produces
perseverance.
Exactly.
And then the last part of that, and it perseverance must finish its work so we can be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. That maturing process sometimes is no fun. Just like climbing the mountain in a storm is no fun. But when you get there, the view is so worth the climb.
Well, for sure. And when you get there with somebody else, it's even more worth it.
Yep, because then you can share it with someone.
Walking alone sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think brothers who have fought in foxholes, those type of things, football players who have played on the same field together, when you complete something together, that camaraderie, that connection is something that men deeply need.
Yeah, brotherhood is a real thing.
It is.
Yeah.
You think about, like, even in the Indians, when I was reading about this last week, when they would cut their hand or their forearm and they would put their hands or forearms together, blood brothers.
Yep.
It means we've been running this race together. I've got your back, you've got mine, I got your six, you got mine, no matter what. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, for sure. I did that with Chris when we were young. We didn't know any different. I think we did our thumbs or something.
Oh, wait, that was
I know
an artery.
We didn't do our wrists.
It's just a flesh wound.
I think we did our thumbs. I don't know.
Get the medical kit.
We were like, hey, now we're blood brothers.
Yeah, I think we probably did something like prick your thumb with something and then just kind of touch them. I think I did that too.
Nowadays, you should probably not do that anymore.
You're right.
I mean, who knows?
I know. When I was a kid, we used to, in Pennsylvania, my buddy and I used to build forts up in the woods. And we built one. We called it Chippewa was the name of the fort we did. And I think that's where we actually did that. And we put, like, teepees. We built teepees on this thing.
Did the whole nine yards, huh?
Had our BB guns.
Oh,
and the enemy was chipmunks. You know, that was what we did as kids.
Well, that was when I didn't understand the principle of eating what you kill.
Right. As you get older,
I'm not
proud
of that, but I also recognize the immaturity in the decision-making process of a 14-year-old kid.
And as you get older, too, if you wound an animal when you're hunting, you grieve it.
It hurts.
You grieve it even when you've taken the animal.
It hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah. A buddy of mine shot once. We were hunting squirrel, and his shot just clipped the front of the squirrel, took off the nose and the mouth. And the squirrel was just like...
Yeah.
Dancing in pain, and it's like, kill it as fast as you can, kill it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you an ethical question.
Yep.
There's a shot known as the ethical shot.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that phrase before?
Mm-hmm.
It's usually most commonly used in hunting birds, because the ethical shot arguably is when the bird is on the ground, because it's much more likely to be a kill shot. But the ethical problem is, legally you can't hunt birds on the ground. So, just out of curiosity, do you have a position on that?
Because, see, I'm not the only bird hunter.
I know you're not a big bird hunter.
Now, turkeys, you can shoot.
Well, turkey's a different story. Yeah,
it's a different story.
Pull the bow and send that nice little.
I can only compare it to, like, when I think in like whitetails or any big game animal.
There's an ethical shot there.
The broadside, the quartering too, is not the shot you really want because you can hit shoulder. The quartering away is okay because you can aim for the opposite front shoulder and still get lungs and heart and everything. One shot that guys might say, I don't know if that's an ethical shot or not, would be straight on.
Yeah.
And the reason, it's not that it's not a kill shot.
But it's...
It's the animal can move so quickly.
It's also a smaller... Yeah.
You've got like a softball-sized area you have to put that arrow through.
Yeah.
Of course, the Texas heart shot, no. No, that's the one where the animal's running away from you and you've got a high-powered rifle and you shoot it from the rear. And I don't... Just because you have a 300... Right, wind mag or something doesn't mean you get to take that shot.
I also
whether you
don't want to risk putting bile throughout the entire deer.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? And again, coming back to tracking and stuff, I've seen a lot of guys, they'll shoot a deer and they get right on it immediately. Well, if you know you made a heart or a lung shot, give it at least 30 minutes. If it was a double lung, still 30 minutes. But if you hit like liver, you need to give that deer 4 to 6 hours.
Yeah.
And if you gut shot that animal, unfortunately, it happens. You know, something get hit a branch, sure, they sure, can move. Sure. You need to let that animal go overnight because it's going to expire, but it's going to take probably overnight.
Yeah, and there's no reason to make it move farther away.
Yeah, there's no reason to keep pushing that animal.
Don't, yeah.
It's going to make it harder to recover because once the animal's laid down and they start to stop bleeding somewhat, it's hard to pick right back up and find that blood trail.
Yeah.
Funny thing. Guy had a plan, talking about ready, aim, fire. There's a guy from Iowa, and he called me one night, and it was late. It was like 11 o'clock at night, and I was getting ready to go to bed. And he was telling me, you know, he had put the hammer down on this deer. He made a really good shot, and he's a very ethical hunter. And he says, I can't find this. He had seen me teaching a whitetail seminar. I was out there doing one at a game dinner I was speaking at. And he calls me, he goes, man, I'm sorry to call so late, but I've come to the last blood. I can't find this animal. And he said, you got any advice for me? And I said, well, they a lot of times they'll head to water. He says, yeah, I know there's a big river. I know it didn't cross this river. He said, I know it's probably gone that direction, but I've lost last blood. And I said, all right, I want you to do me a favor. Are you on the last blood right now? He said, no, I guessed where I thought it might have gone around, but there. I said, did you mark where you had the last blood?
Right.
He says, yeah, we've got that all marked. I said, okay, I want you to go back.
Go back, yeah.
And I want you to look. And where that last blood was, I said, did you see a little bit more blood there? He says, yeah. He says, it looked like he stood here, and then he took off. I said, well, he probably didn't take off. Here's what I want you to do. I said, did you make a good? He goes, I know I double-lunged this animal. I said, all right, we're going to find that animal. We're going to find it right now. He goes, well, how's that going to happen? We've been looking for hours. I said, go back to that last blood. He did. I said, do you see a lot of leaves and dirt kicked up around the area? He said, yeah, how did you know that? I said, all right, here's what I want you to do. Each one of you start going, one go left, one go right, and start making circles with your flashlights, like in 15 feet. And there was a log, and on the other side of the log was the deer. He said, how did you know that? I said, well, did you ever, as a kid, like have a ball bat, and you put the bottom of the ball bat on the ground, and you take your forehead and put it on the handle, and you spin circles. And you all of a sudden, you're so dizzy, you can't stand up. I said, that's exactly what happens, because when you've penetrated those lungs, everything that's happening, it's not getting the oxygen to the brain now that it needs, and it got dizzy. It went as far as it could go. But the thing was, he had a plan, and he executed it, and he was willing to reach out to me and say, hey, can you help me with this? That's a part of ready, aim, fire. Sometimes when you can't do it yourself, you have to have someone else step in and help you. Well, guys, I hope today that no matter whatever it is that you're looking to do, that you can see that God is the author of the purpose and the plan that he has in your life. And no matter whatever it is that you're afraid of, you can't hit what you're not aiming for, right? You can't move mountains if you're not willing to move your feet. And, you know, God's not looking for that perfect marksman. But what he's looking for are willing warriors. So I want to encourage you guys, draw back, take a deep breath, take the shot, because God has a plan for your life.
Brent, that's great stuff. I loved that you prayed at the end of the episode last week. Let's have you pray again and close
absolutely.
Us out.
Father God, the world clouds our purpose, and the enemy keeps saying, you can't have a purpose because of your past. Who would ever want you to be swinging a sword? God, somehow, we would ask that you would just kind of reveal to us that plan that you have for us, and more than anything else, reveal who we really are to you, whose we really are, which is Christ in us. That our sins really have been cast as far as the east is from the west, and you remember them no more. Father, help us to trust you as we look forward and move into that thing that you have just for us. Help us to be prepared. Help us to plan and help us to be disciplined that when you say go, we are ready. Thank you so much, God, for loving us right where we're at, and that nothing will ever disqualify us because of your forgiveness, your mercy, and your grace. In Jesus' mighty name.
Amen.
Guys, if you know somebody that needs to hear this podcast, we just want to encourage you to share this with them. You know, give us a like, subscribe. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Apple, YouTube, anywhere you find podcasts. But again, as always, you guys know what's coming. And I want you to say this out loud with me if you're driving in your car right now. That when a man knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he's no longer held captive by the opinions of others or cares whether he lives or dies, that man is now extremely dangerous. Dangerous for good, because he's been unleashed. We'll see you next time.